You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right, like the dude just said. So listen, we're going to go to number three on the Triple Dipper. Legalities of fighting the mandate, the legalities of it. I mean, we're hearing a lot, right? The AG is going to file suit. That's a state action against the federal government. We also hear people talking about, especially the ones that don't want to see anything change. There's a supremacy clause, federal law trumps state law. And most of the time, they don't know what they're talking about. Is there a supremacy clause? Certainly. Does state law trump, does federal law trump state law? Potentially. You know, the old law school adage is, it depends. Well, I've got somebody who's more of an expert in constitutional law than I am, and that's my buddy Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. Matt has clerked for the state Supreme Court. He has also worked for the Foundation for Moral Law, and now he directs the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. Hey, Matt, thanks for calling into Right Side Radio again.
Hey, not a problem, Phil. Thanks for having me on. I always enjoy it.
Well, thank you. So listen, Matt, number one, let's deal with the question of, can a state take action against a federal mandate that is nothing but an executive order right now? And I think the short answer is yes, but describe that in a little bit more detail, if you would.
Sure, and you're right. The short answer is yes. So generally speaking, if you have a case that arises under the United States Constitution and you're being harmed by something the federal government does, the general rule is you can sue over it. And so right now, with the AG talking about getting ready to sue the federal government over this executive order, he can do that. Now, one thing that's happened since Biden issued his executive order saying that folks who contract with the federal government need to get vaccinated is one of his task forces has come out with guidance on how to do this. So that's really been the catalyst that's set off conservative AGs like Steve Marshall saying, okay, now's the time, we're going to sue, because now the time is ripe for a lawsuit. So, you know, right now, if the AG sues, he can do a lot of good for our state, because we got universities like Auburn and Alabama who receive a lot of money from the federal government that are looking at this order and saying, my goodness, this you know, applies to us. And if we don't get our employees vaccinated, we're going to lose millions in federal funds. And, you know, we might even wind up going out of business. But if Marshall comes along and represents them and he says, I got this, and he comes to the courts and he tells President Biden, your executive order is unconstitutional and it's illegal and we're not going to follow it, and the courts agree with him, then the vaccine mandate largely goes away in the state of Alabama. And that's a very good thing.
Well, and that is a very good thing. And it also can set precedent across the entire 11th Circuit and then beyond. But that being said, Matt, we're also looking at right now, there is growing impetus in the Alabama legislature. It's very possible that we might actually see legislation passed in the next week with a 2/3 majority, if they can get it. I think they can on a vaccine mandate bill. One of the bills that's being looked at right now is strengthening the vaccine passport bill. Another bill sort of pretty much mandates that a religious or medical exemption that is requested has to be granted. So if we have a state law in place, does that give the attorney general, in your opinion, another tool in the toolbox, so to speak?
Yeah, I think it does. Because, you know, especially when it comes to federal contractors, one thing you got to keep in mind is that entities like, you know, Auburn, Alabama, you know, folks that are pushing vaccine mandates right now under this executive order, they're going to be bound by both federal law and by state law, right? So right now they're saying, because we contract with the federal government, we have to abide by this. But then the state of Alabama can come along and say, all right, hey, time out. If you're looking to contract with the federal government in the future, we've got certain conditions we're going to put on you, which include the fact that, you know, you're not going to have vaccine mandates. You're not going to turn down religious exemptions. You're not going to turn down medical exemptions. So we're going to tell you up front, but before the time comes to renew that contract, you can't do that. So on the one hand, that does put some of our state entities like Auburn and Alabama in tough positions, but it does protect the employees who right now are in the crosshairs of getting fired.
So this question I'm going to ask you right now may not be one that you were quite as prepared for, but I think you'll have an answer. Let me ask you this. One of the things that I know is accommodated in Title VII is that a religious exemption request can be requested for various things. In this case, we're looking at vaccines. You can also request a medical exemption. And what we're seeing, though, right now is that some employers, I've been naming them all week, some employers like United Launch Alliance in Decatur or St. Vincent's Hospital in Birmingham are literally putting themselves, I've been saying, putting themselves in the position of being the priest as opposed to the boss. They're deciding whether it's religious enough. Or, for that matter, they're deciding they're the doctor and deciding whether they agree with the request for medical exemption. And I know that there is allowed to be some measure of consideration by an employer, but it's supposed to be liberally construed in favor of the requester. And the bills that we're seeing in the state legislature are designed to strengthen that and push that, you know, enhance that to some degree. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I mean, I think those bills that strengthen religious liberty protection and make it, more broad, I think those are good things, and I fully support them. You're absolutely right, Phil, that, you know, there are some entities like United Launch Alliance and St. Vincent's that, you know, are starting, when they're getting religious accommodation requests, they're starting to tear them up. They're starting to put these religious beliefs under a microscope. They're kind of turning the accommodation process really into an inquisition process where, you know, they're forcing everybody to say, well, you know, prove to me that you believe this as applies to this situation and that situation and so on and so forth. And American law for the longest time has always presumed that religious beliefs don't need to be, frankly, even logical or consistent in order to merit legal protection. All that really matters is that particular person has a sincere religious conviction that God doesn't want them to do that. And that should be good enough to invoke the accommodation process. So, yeah, I think a lot of these companies are getting themselves, they're asking for lawsuits by becoming the priest instead of the boss. Instead, what they need to do is give due consideration for religious objections. And I think this pending legislation can only help protect religious liberty.
Well, and I agree. Well said. And I love the fact that you pointed out that some of them are turning it into an inquisition process. Because one of the things that I did see, I had someone on the inside sent me a copy of the form that is being requested for or requested by St. Vincent's for anyone who wants a religious accommodation. And they say on the form that they reserve the right to go and speak to your faith leader, to go and speak to other people in your life as witness testimony as to whether or not they believe this is really a sincerely held belief. And they're allowed then to judge it on their merits as opposed to yours. And I think that goes far askew from what the law actually contemplates. And I believe this state law that's being considered right now may address that, because the Attorney General himself said yesterday, you shall not create what you just termed as a inquisition process. I think that's good.
Yeah, thanks. It's one thing that's been alarming me, because I've been working with a lot of clients and prospective clients that are seeking for, you know, these accommodations. And, you know, I'm just getting the impression, Phil, that as our society gets more and more secular, you have people in HR departments and legal departments that really don't understand the nature of a religious objection. I think what they're used to seeing are things like people asking for a certain day off because it's their Sabbath, or they're asking for accommodations to wear like head coverings or have beards or something like that as part of their job. That's kind of what they're used to seeing. But at the end of the day, what people have to understand is that religion can apply to all of life. It can apply to things like looking at this vaccine and saying, because this has a connection with an abortive fetal cell line, I can't do this in good conscience because God says you shall not murder. And even though I didn't, you know, kill these kids, by partaking of it, I feel like I'm going to be guilty of it. Or the responsibility to treat your body as a temple of the Holy Spirit. That doesn't make sense to a lot of these folks in the HR, but they need to get it.
Well, and you're right, and that's well put. Listen, Matt, if you could hold on, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about a recent decision that came out of the U.S. District Court in D.C. and ask your thoughts on whether or not that has any effect or extends out beyond the plaintiffs of that case itself. Can you hang on during the break?
Heck yeah, let's do it.
All right, man. That's Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty talking about the legalities of fighting the vaccine mandate. Because there are a lot of nuances in the law. You can't just get what you want because you want it. You got to go through the procedure and you got to abide by existing law at the time. And it has to be something that basically equates to a constitutional or statutory requirement. Folks, listen, we're going to come back with that and more. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. So listen, we're going to go back to the phones with my buddy Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. And so, Matt, there was a case, it's styled right now in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia as Church and Others versus Biden and Others. And it's basically, it's a suit by a number of plaintiffs basically seeking, first of all, injunctive relief to stop their active duty careers or federal jobs from being terminated due to non-vaccination. And a ruling came out, or an order came out, enjoining the government from doing so. And of course, just in the last couple hours, I see where the Biden administration has now filed seeking relief from the order. But tell me this, what's your perspective on this case? And does this case, I don't see them being certified as a class, so I don't know that this goes beyond the District of Columbia, but what is your perspective? Does this extend out from there?
So I think the short answer to that is yes. It's not going to extend out directly, but as a practical matter, I think when you know, the very first court to consider this matter rules in favor of those in the military, a lot of people are, or a lot of other courts are going to want to follow that lead. You know, as a fellow lawyer, you know that if an issue of first impression comes to the court and it's never considered it before, what's one of the first things that it does? It looks around the country to see what other courts have done. You know, that's called persuasive authority. So I think here, having an early win for the military is going to be good. I know of at least one other suit going on right now where this is happening. There's one down in Florida that my friend Matt Staver is bringing on behalf of, I think, about 20 Navy SEALs and a bunch of other folks who are in active military that are asking for the exact same relief. So hopefully, if that court follows the D.C. District Court's lead, then we're going to get like a snowball effect going where the military is going to be protected from this pretty quick.
So what you're saying there, just in summary, I guess, is in great analysis, is that basically this particular order coming out of the District of Columbia, which is known for being a liberal district, by the way, but if this particular order takes effect, it affects the plaintiffs in that case, not necessarily putting an injunction across the nation, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's right. You know, one thing that's become tricky for conservatives now is when Trump was in power, liberals used to ask for nationwide injunctions in just about every case they brought against him. And, you know, for conservatives, now that we're on the other side of it, it puts us in a tough position because on the one hand, you know, when one unelected federal judge gets to issue an injunction that binds the entire country, it really makes you think, you know, Is this the power that the Constitution gives federal judges? Because now we're not even talking about one Supreme Court that gets to bind the whole country. We're talking about like one, you know, federal district judge who's unelected, unaccountable to anybody else, who gets to decide what's good for the entire country. So that's bad. But on the other hand, if we, you know, play by the rules, just trying to take care of one plaintiff at a time or going through the hard work of doing a class action, then, you know, we've got to try to protect one soldier, one person at a time until it all adds up. And that's pretty tough. So I don't think they asked for a nationwide injunction here. And as a principled matter, that was probably a good thing to do. But I'm really hoping we get a win in the class action suit pretty soon, because we need to protect more than just these 10 soldiers in this particular suit.
No, and I totally agree. And I had somebody tell me once when I was just new into the law practice, or the practice of law, that the most powerful person in the entire United States is a federal district court judge, because they're the only ones who can tell a president what to do. Everything after that is appealing that decision. And that's an interesting perspective. Well, hey, Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty, thanks for being on today and helping us unpack this a little bit. We appreciate your time as always.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Phil.
All right. Well, listen, I had a caller, by the way, while we're waiting for this next break to come up, I had a caller apparently who called in while we were on the air with Matt and just had the simple question: even if our state passes a bill protecting exemptions, wouldn't federal law trump it? Well, first of all, please understand this. Federal law already says those exemptions exist. All we're doing is strengthening those exemptions at the state level. So federal law and state law, I think, would be in sync at that point. Also, keep in mind, too, that with regards to vaccine mandates, that is not a law. That's an executive order. An executive order has the semblance of law without having what they call the color of law. In other words, it was not passed by Congress. So this particular, an executive order can go away the next day. All it takes is a stroke of a pen. Or for that matter, the next election. For instance, when Trump left office, Biden came in and put in like 45 executive orders on day one just to get rid of what he believed Trump had put in place. So executive orders, while they may have impact and they have import and they set policy and they tell government how to do its work, that's basically what they do. They tell government how to do its work. That's why the executive order is telling OSHA come up with regulations to regulate businesses. Or they're telling the military, you will get a shot because you fall under the executive branch as the commander-in-chief. Those things can happen with an executive order, but it's not the same as Congress passing it. If a state has a law and the federal government doesn't, then the question becomes, doesn't state law trump? Because an executive order is not law. An executive order is just an order. So that's where it sits right now. And to answer, I hope that answered your question. But what we're looking at right now is that literally there are any number of ways we can attack this, one of which is I believe the legislature will be passing, I hope they're going to be passing, something right here in the state of Alabama in the next week that strengthens our state law positions as to vaccine mandates. I think the AG is going to come out with a lawsuit very quickly and sue on behalf of the welfare of the state of Alabama and its citizens. And that's going to be important. And then thirdly, Congress. If we can keep this thing jammed up for a while and get to 2022 and flip the script, Congress can pass legislation in 2022 or soon after everybody's sworn in when we take the House and the Senate back and put it in place that this particular executive order does not have the power of law and it would be rescinded. That's the three-pronged attack I hope has to happen. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.